Hi, I'm Neil Warren, and welcome to another episode of the Happy Hour Harmonica podcast, with more interviews with some of the finest harmonica players around today. Please be sure to subscribe to the podcast, and also check out the Spotify playlist where some of the tracks discussed during the interviews can be heard. A word from my sponsor, the Lone Wolf Blues Company, makers of effects pedals, microphones and more, designed for harmonica. Remember, when you want control over your tone, you want Lone Wolf. Really appreciate Lone Wolf supporting the podcast and helping me keeping it going. Brendan Power is my guest today. A true visionary of harmonica design, Brendan takes us under the hood of the instruments he has revolutionized with his alternative tunings and new designs, all helping him make some great harmonica music across a range of different genres. So hello, Brendan, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Neil. Great to be here.
First off, starting your name, Power, a great stage name, but that is your real name, yeah, with Irish roots.
Yes, it's actually a very common name on the east coast of Ireland. My grandfather was from the Waterford area.
You were actually born in Kenya.
That's right, yeah. My grandfather was sent off to the Christian Brothers Order, which is a teaching order. Then he was sent out to South Africa to teach in the mission schools there. He left the order and then became a well-known archaeologist, scientist in South Africa. That's where my dad was born, in Kimberley. And my mum, her parents are both Dutch. So actually by blood, I'm more Dutch than anything else. And then my dad, they went to university, met up. My dad was sent to, went to Kenya. And that's where all of us kids were born. I'm the oldest one. I've got two brothers and a sister. I was 9 when my family decided to move to New Zealand. Then from 9 till about 30-something, I was in New Zealand.
It's when you were at university in Christchurch, I believe, that you discovered the harmonica by hearing Sonny Terry play the concert.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I had absolutely no idea who Sonny Terry was or Brownie McGee or even what blues music was, to be honest. My family was Catholic and they're fairly strict. As kids, we didn't have a television growing up. We didn't really, I suppose, have that adolescent immersion in the culture. So I hadn't really been exposed to much pop music or blues music, certainly didn't know what it was. But a friend took me along to this concert. It was a free concert at the university. So it was a revelation, hearing this amazing music, blues, which I'd never heard before. And then hearing the harmonica played like that, you know, by one of the great masters. It was just jaw-dropping. The, hairs on the back of my neck went up, and I was just Damascus moment, I suppose, of conversion and just being blown away. So, yeah, next day I went out and bought a harmonica. Luckily, I got sold the right one, which is a diatonic, 10-hole diatonic. Started from absolute scratch, had no idea what about music or anything. And I was already 20 years old by that stage, so pretty late starter.
So how was the devil's music received back at home?
Not too well. I mean, I was at university. I was doing pretty well at university. I did a bachelor's in English and religious studies. And religious studies was not theology. It was just basically a study of world religions. But I did do a master's in religious studies. I got interested in Taoism, the yin-yang, the early Taoism, that sort of Chinese philosophy, and did a thesis on a guy called Chuang Tzu, one of the main philosophers. But halfway through my studies, probably went into there about 18 and heard Sonny Terry on probably the third year when I was 20. You could say it went all downhill. I mean, I kept going and I got my master's degree, but I became more and more obsessed with just the harmonica and playing, you know, hours and hours every day. My parents, they became a little bit concerned. And then at the end of my studies, when I thought all I want to do is basically play music, they didn't understand the music, and the harmonica is, it's kind of hasn't got a very high status as an instrument. So they were pretty disappointed. And my dad said, look, I can see that you've got this obsession, but just give it a period of time. And if things don't work out, put it aside and do something, get a real job if you like. But sadly, I'm still going.
You had, like most musicians, probably you had some early struggles. That early time when I think you were playing around New Zealand and...
I was in the bones of my ass, poverty stricken. But I didn't care because I was just, as long as I had some harps and some time to practice and stuff, that was all that worried me. I just did part-time jobs, shoveling coal and all sorts of things, and also on the dole periodically as well. So, basically, as long as I could keep playing, I money wasn't didn't matter. But yeah, I was pretty poverty-stricken for a long time.
Yeah. So what was that like? Those early years playing in New Zealand. There was I think you had a good scene in Auckland.
Absolutely. Yeah. There. Yeah. I mean, after I studied in Canterbury University, I understood that if you wanted to get anywhere in music, you had to go to Auckland. I went up there. I didn't really know. I think I knew one person was sleeping on people's floors for a while and stuff. But then I lucked into this amazing folk scene there because I was playing sort of blues. I was interested in Charlie McCoy, so that was kind of bluegrassy sort of stuff. And then there was this wonderful folk scene there throughout the 80s and just some fabulous friends and musicians that I met. But I was also playing in country bands. Like I was in a band called Hillman Hunter and the Roots Group, which is kind of like country music band playing bluegrass and also playing blues with a great Maori blues singer called Sunny Day and his blues band. So I was playing all sorts there. There was a whole lot going on. There was a thriving live scene, pubs and stuff with live music everywhere. It was just a really brilliant time. It's changed a lot now, but, I sort of was lucky to be there at a great time in the music scene.
Just talking about some of your early influences, obviously you talked about Sonny Terry there, and I know you got into Sonny Boy Williamson II. Was there any particular songs that particularly inspired you?
Yeah, I remember Help Me by Sonny Boy Williamson, Rice Miller. You know, all of his stuff just blew me away. You know, he was my guru, really. You know, you could say in some ways it was simpler to learn than, I mean, Sonny Terry, there's a lot going on and he plays pretty fast licks and I love his playing, but Sonny Boy Williamson has got so much soul. He plays, slower, but it's got so much soul and feeling on every note.
Sleep for $100 and I didn't have but 99.
But then I heard Little Walter, and of course, like as with just about every harp player you could think of, he utterly blew me away. I mean, he was just that, electric amplified sound that he got. And of course, the kind of the other guys like Big Walter Horton, James Cotton, Junior Wells, all those guys, I loved them as well.
You can call and what you want, I'll call and nothing with a cure. Hey, look at him.
Everyone that I talk to on here makes the same point that, yeah, there's a lot of great players, but there's something about those guys, isn't there? All the names you mentioned and a few others about, they just had something, didn't they?
That yeah. Well, I mean, you could say that, they've created an entire genre. Those, five or six, especially Little Walter, Sonny Boy Williamson, Sonny Terry, they're probably the kind of the key guys in each particular little strand of that blues style. I mean, they've just basically spawned an entire industry and millions of players around the world. If only they got the benefit of it, when they were alive.
Yeah. So as you say, obviously your roots in blues harmonica, and that's how a lot of people get interested into harmonica. What's the great thing about harmonica in more recent times, I know the last 20 years or so, and you're a great exponent of it, is the fact that you can play different styles of music on the harmonica. Again, from what I've read about you, Charlie McCoy was a big influence on you here and a big influence on you, playing melodic style, but also an influence on you retuning the harmonica. And he inspired you with his major seventh tuning to get interested in retuning harmonicas. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, I was just, looking for records in the bargain bins in Christchurch when I was still a student there. There was two or three tracks on, I found a few of his other albums, on every Charlie McCoy album. He just blitzed it out there, on some really fast fiddle type tune. I was just blown away by the speed and dexterity and accuracy of his playing, and it was something that I hadn't heard before. Plus, it was in a genre sort of related a little bit to music that I heard before, which is Irish music, because growing up as a kid, we had a few Irish records in the house, and after I'd been playing the blues a little bit, I was starting to try to pick out some of these little Irish tunes. And what he was playing was in cross harp in second position. So you had all the lovely flavor of that, but it had that Irish Celtic feel or that, and fast. So yeah, he just blew my socks off. So yeah, he became a big influence on me. as you say, listening to some of his tunes, I realized that he was getting the major seventh in crossharp quite easily. And I figured, well, they must have done something with that reed. And I'd always been a tinkerer, you know, with everything, bikes and all sorts of things. I got that from my dad, who was a master sort of mechanic and stuff like that. So, you know, it wasn't long before the covers were off and I was just looking at this thing and thought, ah, and figured out if you could file the reeds and take weight off, and suddenly the pitch rose. So then, bang, you know, had a major seventh harmonica and could do what he was doing. And I thought, well, you know, you can do that with one reed, you could do it with lots of other reeds as well. And so that really was the start of my experimentation with alternate tunings. Just been a fascinating ride. I mean, you could say it's a curse in some ways, because, you know, I've gone through so many tunings where I thought, this is the one, this is what I'm going to stick with. And then I spend, you know, months tuning up harmonicas and getting them all ready for that, and then years mastering the tuning. And then, you know, at some point down the line, I have a little, you know, I wake up one morning, now if I did that and did that, I could do that. And then, you know, basically it can lead to reinventing the wheel, if you like. And I've done that about four or five times with my main tuning, if you like, on the 10-hole diatonic. And it's a big disruption to your to your brain and to everything. You have to rewire yourself, basically. But I don't know. I can't help myself, really. So
you can't really separate your playing from tunings, and the amount of innovations you've come up with is just incredible. I hope you don't dislike this term, but you could be sort of called the mad scientist of the harmonica world. Is that how you see yourself?
Well, to me, it seems normal, and I just wonder why other people don't try alternate tunings. I can understand why, because a tuning is like an operating system. It's Mac versus Windows or whatever, but even more extreme than that. And people, I'm the same with you know, computers. We get comfortable and familiar with an operating system, and to be pushed out of that comfort zone, that sort of nice little rut that we're in, and being forced to kind of press different buttons or blow a different hole to get the same note that you've always been getting somewhere else, you know, it's really, people are resistant to that kind of thing. We don't like it. What matters is the music, you know, the notes that you play, the music that comes out. The instrument is really just a vehicle to allow you to play great music, you know, or the best music you can. And if the instrument is an impediment to that, you know, one approach is to just kind of sweat and try and force the instrument to do things that it wasn't designed to do and maybe doesn't do very well. Another way, which I think is more intelligent, is to basically just change the instrument. And then suddenly you've got sweetness and soul and stuff flowing in the right places. I don't think there's one size that fits all. For instance, if you take blues, the fact that people are playing blues and crossharp is a pure, you know, accident. It's, you know, blues wasn't even thought of or invented by the people who made that, designed the harmonica in Germany in the 19th century. It's a pure accident that a part of it sounds great played in a different key, second position. You can bend and draw notes, and it's, you know, the African Americans found that. But the top octave, you know, it's got its pluses in Richter tuning, but the a couple of things about it really are not very conducive to the style of playing blues that people love to play. For one thing, the notes you can bend in the top octave. The first thing is the breathing pattern changes at hole number seven, which is kind of annoying, and a lot of people struggle up there because the breathing pattern is different. Why, you know, why not change that around? If you do that, then instead of having your you know, blow notes bending, you have draw notes bending, which people are familiar with down the bottom. So instantly you've got two things that are easier, and when things are easier, people can play more fluidly and faster and with more. They don't have to think so much, so they can instantly get more out of the instrument. And the third thing is that you can actually tune it so that your bends up the top end are more appropriate for playing second position. Because if you think about it, in second position, you got your 1-3-5 of the scale, which is hole 2-draw, 3-draw, 4-draw, and they all bend. And that's why you get the beautiful soul in second position. In the top end, you know, you're bending the 4 on hole number 10 and the 1 on hole number 9 and then the 6 on hole number 8. So you've got these bends that work great in a different key. Like if you're playing a C harp, they work great in C. But when you're playing a C harp in blues, you're actually playing in G. So your G bends are not really up there. So why the hell not keep the bending concept, but just change the notes up the top end so that you've got the same lovely bends up there as you do in the bottom octave. And then the whole thing flows better. It's more expressive. Thank you.
One thing I still, which a lot of people see as a barrier, of course, is that if you do play different tunings, and you alluded to it a little bit yourself earlier on, is then you've got to get your head around playing those different tunes, isn't there? So how do you get around that?
Basically, I've probably got 7 or 8 tunings that I use, you know, like on a gig, but there's only a couple where I would improvise with them. I've got several tunings which are really good for certain styles of music where I'd learn a tune on them and maybe some variations, but I wouldn't use them for jamming so much. If I want to get out and jam, then Power Bender is my main one on the diatonic. And on the chromatic, I've got another one called Power Chromatic. It's like part of Power Bender just repeated up there, up the harp. Those are the two where I, you know, over the years, I've sort of got comfortable with improvising. The other ones, I think it's quite easy to flip your brain into playing something in a different tuning if it's related to a specific piece, a track or a tune or whatever. I mean, guitarists do it with alternate tunings on the guitar. You know, they would mostly play standard tuning, but then if they want a different flavor or something for you know, a particular piece, they'll go into an alternate, they will use an alternate tuning, but they'll only use it for that small subset of their tunes and their it's the same on the harmonica. So you can have just one tuning that you really, really can wail on, and then you can have several others that are great for particular styles. You know, I've got some really out there ones, like this one I use called the Asia Bend, which is an all draw harmonica. And that's fantastic for really getting a lot of juice out of slower, soulful melodies. But I couldn't really get around and go to a jam on it very easily. So I tend to sort of have tunings in two categories like that, the jamming ones and then the other ones where they work great for particular styles.
One tuning I use lots and lots from yours is the Paddy Richter tuning. The Paddy Richter tune is a very good example, isn't it? Just one note change just completely opens up the possibility to play those tunes in first position.
Yes, it's just one reed changed. It's a bit like country tuning, but down the bottom end. Does make a huge difference. Gives you fourth position becomes really easy, doesn't it? First position becomes a lot easier. So, and you can still play a great second position on it too. You can play more like chromatic runs easier and stuff. That's a really important note, that the one that, you know, we're talking about where you raise the 3-blow up a tone and you get that full step draw bend normally, which is on 3-draw, and it becomes a inbuilt note. Suddenly it really means you can flow around the bottom end of the harp a lot quicker. I tend to use it for mostly Irish Celtic melodies. I actually don't play Paddy Richter myself anymore. I play what I call Paddy Solo. So I've got the Paddy Richter bottom end, and then I change the tuning in the top end. So it's more like, it's like solo tuning. So it'll go up to from hole number 4 to hole number 7 as in Richter. But then I double up the, you know, if we're talking about a C harp, I double up the C note in hole number 8. So the top octave is like the middle octave.
I think one point I'm trying to get across to people listening here is we're talking about the Paddy Richter just being one note tuned, the major seventh, you know, the country tuning just being one note difference as well. And talking about some of your power draw and power benders, which are more or less the same as the lower octave, where, you know, allowing you to do the bends the same way. You know, I think people are maybe a little bit hesitant to think, oh, I couldn't handle a different tuning. You know, I think the message is here, they're not really that different than what they're already used to, you know, and it's not such a big leap to go across them to try some of them out.
Very good point, Neil. Basically, for instance, say power draw, you've got, you know, the bulk of the harp, your meat and potatoes area, as they call it, you know, hole number 1 to 6 is identical to a standard harp. So you don't have to change anything there. And in the top end, once you flick a switch in your brain, you can think, well, oh, this is the same as my bottom end stuff. So I can actually play a lot of similar licks. You know, you've got 3-draw, 4-draw licks. Now they're on 7 and 8. And you've got your 2-draw licks, which is now on hole number 9. So you can actually just transfer your licks up, you know, your bottom end licks up the top end there. So once you do that, I think you can, you know, you can cope with these, or you can pick up these altered tunings a lot easier than you think.
I'll put links to your website and to your different tunings available. And some of them are available through Seidl now as well, aren't they? You can actually go and choose the different tunings and customize very heavily on the Seidl. And, you know, in a way, it's almost like people are a bit intimidated by it. There's too many options. Would you sum up something in a very quick and easy way around, you know, what each one gives you quickly that people can go, yeah, maybe I'll try that one?
That is a good point. Talking of specific tunings, I think Paddy Richter, if you want to play folk tunes and like dance tunes and all that thing, I think Paddy Richter is a really effective and powerful one. Another one that's used quite a bit is easy third tuning, which I it's not one of my tunings, but people like Rick Epping and Joel Anderson use that quite a bit. I prefer Paddy Richter. There's a note missing in easy third, which is, you know, problematic for me. But Paddy Richter for those kind of tunes. If you want to play blues, I think Power Draw and Power Bender are really fantastic tunings for, not just for blues, but also for jazz. Personally, my favorite is Power Bender because it gives you more chromaticism through easy draw bends. And it means you can play, you can modulate into different keys a lot easier than, with, say, Richter or Power Draw. On chromatic, another thing that I came up with early days was half valving. When I first bought a chromatic, I realized, I can't bend the notes and what's going on there. So I pulled the covers off, realized it was the valves on the outside of the harmonica that were stopping me bending them. So I just pulled them off. Suddenly I could bend the notes on the chromatic. But I really liked the feeling of the inside valves because they gave the blow notes more power and more purity. And you could put sort of vibrato and stuff on them. So I thought, I really like that feeling, and I'll try that in my diatonics. So then I started putting valves inside the diatonics, and, that was the start of half valving, which is now quite a popular choice for quite a few people.
I was talking to P.T. Gazelle a couple of episodes as well. Yeah, so we talked a lot about half valving on there. So
for me, half valving gives expression and soul and whatever on the blow notes, but I don't use it so much for playing chromatic notes. But yeah, P.T. has really developed it well in that really well in that area, and you know, plays jazz using those valve bends, and you know, fair play to him. So yeah, but just getting back to the alternate tuning, so on those, I mentioned the diatonic ones. On chromatic, I use one called Power Chromatic, which is like the middle part of Power Bender, but it's also half-valved. I've got a chromatic here just as a quick illustration. You can play a chromatic scale, and that's using the button. But now, with my Power Chromatic, I can also go. So, you know, I can play the entire chromatic scale with only one use of the button. So here's, so that's a chromatic scale coming down, and I can play. So that's chromatic. You can hear with the button there. Basically, the half valving with the bends means you can play the chromatic like a diatonic. And the great thing is that, you've got essentially got two harmonicas in one. So you can play. So I just put the slider in there and you can play exactly the same thing, but you're in a different key. So, yeah, half valve chromatic, I think, is a it's got huge potential for all sorts of styles of music with giving you a lot of expression plus full chromaticism.
It's very interesting, your approach to chromatics, because, you know, to me, the two instruments, the diatonic and chromatic, are almost different instruments. Yeah, the chromatic, more of a clean sound, but obviously the diatonic has got the bending expression that we all love about the diatonic. You've mixed the two, yeah? You sort of married the two together, so your chromatic is more like a diatonic. Obviously, all the notes are available on chromatic, but you've decided you want that bending expression. Yeah, that's the reason you went and ripped the valves off and decided that. So, you know, what do you see? You know, how would you approach your chromatic playing? Against a lot of people more traditionally would play kind of what you might call stricter or play more written music where they want cleaner sounds.
Mm. Yes, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, basically, I started on the diatonic, and when I picked up the chromatic, I missed my bends. And so I tried to make the chromatic sound more like a diatonic. And that's how I've always done it. You can still play with pure sounds. This is a half valve chromatic. So here's your blow notes, you know. And here's your draw notes. basically the two notes don't sound radically different, you know, even though one is valved and one's not valved.
So how do you not lose the, you know, how do you not make them more airy then? Because obviously that's the point of the windsavers.
Yes. Well, basically the chromatic needs to be pretty airtight in all the other respects. Like your slider tolerances need to be really good. So the slider, that's a big source of air loss on chromatics, is the slider area. So you need to have that really sealed well and airtight. And also with your reed gaps, on your blow reed gaps, once you take the draw valves off, air can, as you suck on your draw notes, air can come in through the blow reed gaps. It's the same on a diatonic. You want to get those blow reed gaps, you know, as small as you can, where they still will make a sound on a strong breath. So if you reduce your blow reed gaps, then you're reducing that air loss that comes about when you take the valves off. And then you can go further. You can do things like embossing on chromatics and stuff, which I do as well. You know, basically with a good chromatic and a little bit of adjustment to the reed gapping and possibly embossing if you want to go that far, you can make the whole thing sound very crisp and responsive, pretty much the level of a good diatonic.
And so when would you use a chromatic, a half-valve chromatic over a diatonic? Why would you choose that over a diatonic?
More jazzy tunes is the short answer. I'm just doing a little exploration of a tune called Royal Garden Blues, an old sort of trad jazz tune with Sandy Weltman, who's a great overblow diatonic player. And that's a case in point. I'm sort of wavering between whether I also play power chromatic tune diatonics and whether to use a diatonic or the chromatic. Basically, the chromatic makes it easier to modulate into different keys than the diatonic. Even though I can get the bends, on the diatonic to get the extra notes, with the chromatic, I've got more options with getting the extra notes. I can just push the slide in and play in a different position. So the short answer is for more jazzy tunes, you know, ones which modulate further away from the home key.
If we talk through a few examples of some songs that you do so people can hear you playing the different tunings and what it brings and the sound that it brings.
Actually, I've just started a teaching website on Vimeo. It hasn't got a lot of videos on there, but that's part of my plans for the year, is to do a lot more teaching stuff where maybe short clips, maybe even just playing a lick on a power bender and then explaining exactly what's going on. And it's just a lot more stuff that I will be providing for people who want to explore them.
So your Asia bend, which is, as you'd mentioned earlier on, that allows quarter tone bends down all on the draw.
That's right, yes. Yeah, and I love that harp. I mean, it's really quirky and unusual, but it's just so soulful to play. So I love playing that harp.
So does it only provide you quarter bends?
Well, when you say quarter bends, it's actually, I mean, a quarter tone, it actually provides huge bends. The bends are kind of microtonal in the sense that they, they go through quarter tones, but they bend way more than a quarter tone. So basically, for instance, if I'm playing in D... So you can bend your D a whole 3 semitone. So you can hear the big bends going on there, you know, like, and every single note will bend to the next one. So you can choose if you want to, instead of this note here, which is a natural draw note, I can actually bend down from the one above it. So you can choose a bent version of the note instead, which is often the one I will choose, because you can then put lovely vibrato on it, stuff like that.
It just sounds like a different instrument. It's incredible, isn't it? That's possibly your most innovative one, isn't it, that Asia bend one?
Yeah, it's so satisfying and fun to play.
you know, and again, it really opens up, doesn't it, that point you're doing a show, you know, you're just playing so many different styles of music, to be able to put some of that in. I think you use it on your Bulgarian songs as well, don't you?
That's another alternate tuning. That's a little bit like Power Chromatic, but just with one note variation. It's a bit like the Paddy Richter version of Power Chromatic, if you like. There's just one note changed, but then it suddenly gives you those Arabic Bulgarian type scales, really a lot easier.
So getting on to a little bit into your Frankenharps, as you I think you call it. So were you butcher those poor harmonicas, Brendan? So I think this started when you were young in New Zealand, yeah, where you decided to make yourself an 11-hole diatonic.
That's right, yeah. I mean, getting back to the concept of removing that reverse breathing pattern in Richter tuning, which I always found annoying, I wanted to, you know, basically have the same breathing pattern throughout the entire harp, where the blow note is always lower than the draw. And that means I could bend all the draw notes right throughout the entire range of the harmonica. So what I did was get my hacksaw out and hacksaw the reed plate in half at hole number, just after hole number six. So then I moved the blow, this is the blow reed plate. So then I moved the blow reed plate to the right by one hole. So hole number seven, you know, like on a C harp, was now in hole number eight. And that meant that it was below the draw note in hole number eight, which is a D. Suddenly you could bend that draw note, you know, which is what I wanted, which is like hole four. So I shifted my entire blow reed plate over by one hole. And that left a gap on hole number, you know, the hole number seven, there was a big gap there. So I filled that with another note. I put another, you know, note the same as hole number six, or there were sort of options what you could have there, but it was another blow note that was below the B note on a C harp, if you like, either a G or an A, which meant you could bend your B draw note, which is you couldn't do on Richter. Okay, so I've moved that one over by a hole, the blow note. So now I've got basically hole number 10 is sticking off the end of the comb. Okay, so it seems like what a waste of a good reed. I thought, well, instead of just chopping off number 10 and keeping it as a 10 hole harp, why don't I chop the comb up altogether and stick another hole on the end to make it into an 11-hole harp. So that's what I did. I used the special 20, sliced the comb at number 10, grabbed another comb, you know, and put the 11th hole on, if you like.
I mean, we talked about doing different tunings, but actually the idea of then start chopping up is incredible. You know, you're taking it to a whole new level. But again, you know, you've done some tremendous innovations. So I'm interested on that one, though. What about the gap between the actual two combs? How did you smooth all that out so you didn't feel it?
Well, you just basically got to be careful. I'd use a hacksaw and then I'd use a sander, you know, fine sanding. And by careful sanding and matching them up, those ABS plastic combs just melt together. If you've got the right glue, they actually bond together a bit like a weld. So basically, once you've got your two sides of the comb nice and flat and smooth, then you just put this sort of plastic weld on there and it actually bonds them together almost stronger than they were before. A lot of people don't want to know about that kind of thing, but there's a small subset of people, I guess, who enjoy that kind of thing, hacking and getting down with your hands, yeah, and making stuff. You know, I don't know what you like, whether you enjoy that or not, but most people don't.
I'm a bit of a halfway there. I do some of my own, you know, changes to the harmonica, and I'll certainly tune them and I'll certainly emboss them. Every time I buy a harmonica, I'll tune it and emboss it.
To be honest, I think a lot more people should do what you're doing, because a harp out of the box is, you know, it's okay, but it can be so much better once you just put a little bit of handwork in.
You worked quite heavily doing customization for a while. I think it became a bit too much for you, you know, taking away from your playing.
That's kind of like a battle I've had for a long, long time. When I say a battle, it's a kind of a tension, because I do love the customizing and coming up with new ideas. And in more recent years, that's actually developed into using computers, you know, with CAD design and then using 3D printers. And I just got totally obsessed with it a few years ago. And basically that's just about all I've done the last 4 or 5 years with very little playing. But, you know, this year I've just seemed to have got the buzz back for the playing and doing, you know, less of the workshop stuff. But it is a sort of a tension, because I do love both aspects, and they're both very creative as well, you know, just making things and creating things, physical things, as well as creating music. I guess in some ways the more steady income comes from the harmonicas. I mean, I come up with thousands of ideas, but only a few of them sort of actually come out as a product. So I've got two strands to my business. There's one where I create the more far out things here using 3D printers and all that kind of thing. But I've also got my sort of tunings that are made in mostly by the Eastok company in China. And I've got a business partner, a good friend of mine in Shanghai, who helps me deal with the company. Certain harps there, the Lucky 13, Power Draw, Power Bender, a few others, are made by the company, the Eastop company, and then they sent to him in Shanghai. And the orders come into me and he posts them out around the world. So I never see those harps, but they do provide a good steady income, which is independent of gigs and all that kind of thing.
One that's been, I think, a big success for you recently has been the Lucky 13. Is that being one of your best sellers?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's unique. That's one thing. There's no other harmonica out there like it. And also it gives people, the sales pitch is two harps in one. You know, you've got your standard harp, you know, your 10 holes, and then you've got another lower octave tagged on the bottom. So it just gives you extra cording range. And I'm keeping on developing the range with different tunings and stuff like that. We're coming up with a Mark II version very soon, actually, which has got some really nice improvements. One of them is a little extension of one of the ideas that I came up with on my custom combs. I call them look dots. They're basically position markers, which are common on stringed instruments, you know, the little dots on the neck, which help people see where they want to go. Because it's a bigger harp, and so it's kind of harder to know exactly where you are on the harp. But these little look dots on the front of the comb instantly give you a reference point, and it makes it a lot easier to, you know, just stay where you want to be on this bigger harp. We've got all the you know, all the boxes and the publicity and everything pretty much ready. It's just I need to get the build up the stop. I'm also adding some valves in the bottom end to bring out the volume of the bottom end notes, which were a bit quieter than the upper end ones because the reeds are swinging so much more. So there's a lot more air going through the reeds. So a few little things like that, new covers, which are smoother in your mouth. There's just lots of little changes, but we got to basically have the stock in place so that when we do finally roll these things out and people want to buy them, we won't be saying, they'll be coming in next month or, you know, 2 months' time. So that's the phase we're at the moment, just the last stages, really, of getting the stock ready, and then I'll launch it.
So the Lucky 13, is that generally a Richter-tuned harmonica?
The standard one is a Richter-tuned harmonica, yes. Yeah, it's Richter-tuned with an extra bottom end, which is identical to your normal bottom end. But I've also got a Paddy Richter version of it. I've got a Power Chromatic version of it. I've got a solo tune version of it. So the longer format does give you a lot more options.
So running quickly over some of your other innovations before we move on. So you've got the twin harp system, which allows you to play basically two harmonicas and sort of switch between them from a kind of mouthpiece that you there's a sort of slider on it, is there?
That's right. Yeah, it's a sort of little holder that you can put two harmonicas of your choice behind, and they could be two different tunings. They could be set up differently. So whatever harmonicas you want to throw in there, I mean, the standard one would be to make something like a mini chromatic, where you have a C harp and a D flat harp in the back, and then you've got a mini chromatic. I mean, there are some problems with any harmonica. Once you get your mouth further away from the reeds, you get this thing called Helmholtz resonance coupling, which it's a technical term for basically what goes on in the resonant frequency of the chamber, which is your vocal tract plus the comb chamber. All the stuff between your throat and the reed has got a resonant frequency. And then the reed itself has got its own resonant frequency, you know, when it's just played. And sometimes those can come into conflict, especially in the top end of the of a harmonica. If you've got a big chamber or a long chamber, the resonant frequency of that chamber, the pitch of it, is lower than the pitch of the reed, the high reed and the harmonica. And what can happen there is that you get this interference between the two of them, and the reed can be forced to play in a suboptimal way. It goes flat, for one thing. It plays flat. And in extreme cases, the reed will just stop working altogether. I've also made double chromatics where you've got two chromatics, you know, in the same kind of thing. And in the very high notes of, say, a C chromatic, C double chromatic, it makes it really problematic. So the long and the short of it is that you work, these things work a lot better with lower keys, you know, like on a diatonic. So if you have something like your lower key diatonics up to about a whole C, but you don't want to go above the whole C. I mean, this happens on any harmonica. I mean, for instance, the XB40, Rick Epping's brilliant design, they had the same problem because your mouth is further away from the reeds. So, you know, when you get in the high keys, it just won't work. It's one of those things. It's an immutable natural law, a bit like gravity. You can't get away from it. Yeah. So the twin, you know, switch harp, I call it, with the slider, has that issue to contend with. But some people just love it because it does give them the option to kind of keep their blues harp sound, but also get all the chromatic notes just by pressing a slider.
Yeah, and you the slide diatonic, which is one of the ones I own of yours as well, which I attuned to the Paddy Richter tuning. The slider bass, where you've made a new mouthpiece for the bass harmonica. I bought one of those as well. I play a bit of bass harmonica, not real expert, but that really revolutionized changing playing the bass harmonica. Instead of having to switch between the two, you know, the two different parts of the bass harmonica, just having a slide on there is an incredible innovation.
Yeah, they took months and months of work, you know, just about everything you're talking about. The process of getting it to a point where it's actually something workable and it's hugely time consuming. But yeah, so over the last, as I say, 4 or 5 years, I've just done a huge amount of that. And, you know, it's all been fascinating. And, I've produced some harmonicas which have pleased a small number of people, you know, like, say, someone like Ross Garin just loves the slider bass. Yeah, they're kind of niche harmonicas, I guess, most of them. The Lucky 13 is not a niche harmonica. That's definitely a mainstream harmonica. But a lot of the other ones you're talking about are more niche harmonicas for people who, you know, a small number of people.
Another thing you're really interested in is using technology, yeah, to enhance what you can get out of a harmonica. And you've got some YouTube videos, which I'll put a link to, about how you can use all the great apps on an iPad to get all these different sounds and synthesizers. And there's all sorts of, you know, you can get amp modelings, can't you, on iPads and plug mics into that. And you got interested in playing looping using these sorts of things. So you want to talk about that for a little bit?
Yes, actually, that's something that I am really into at the moment. At the moment, it's sounds and effects, and having all this time and all my gear just set up there gives you have the time, because it does take a lot of time exploring this, that, and the next thing. I've been into looping for quite a long time. I love looping. But, the iPad in particular is an amazing music machine. It's extraordinary, the incredible apps and stuff that are in there that allow you to do all these amazing things. I mean, looping, for one thing, there's an incredible app in there called Loopy. It's just it's just something on your screen, but it's way better than the looper I've been using for a long time. And there's another thing called sort of real-time pitch to MIDI conversion. This is something I've been fascinated. MIDI sounds are, it's a whole new world. You know, that's the kind of digital sounds that people have been playing on keyboards for a long time, and also some wind synths like the Iwi and stuff. So one way to get that is with a MIDI harmonica, and there's one called the DM48, the Lecom DM48, which is awesome, and I love that. But there's some issues with it. You can't bend notes on it like a normal harmonica and stuff. So I've been trying to find a middle way, where you can use a pitch to MIDI converter. And just recently, things are getting to the point where that's getting more usable. There's an app in the iPad called a MIDI Guitar 2, which is obviously designed for guitarists, but you can plug your mic into it. And as long as you play cleanly, you can trigger all these MIDI sounds quite well without too many, with very few glitches. And that opens up a huge new world of incredible sounds. And I'm just loving exploring that. So, we were talking about the bass harmonica a bit before. Now you can actually play the bass on your normal harmonica. You don't have to have a bass harmonica because you've got MIDI bass sounds. And so you can be playing, but, the sound coming out can be an awesome bass patch about 3 octaves below where you are. It sounds awesome. So it's just so empowering, this MIDI world. And it is getting possible now to trigger it using standard harmonicas.
Again, maybe at this time, a lot of people are interested in home recording. It's something that, I certainly dabble in, and I do reasonable amounts. Again, it's a bit like we were talking about earlier on, that it's almost too many choices, isn't it? So much stuff out there, isn't it? It's what do you focus on? So I think your videos are maybe a good way in for a harmonica player to look and say, well, these are some of the things that work, yeah? And, a bit of you've done some of the work for us. We can look. The Loop is a good example of the app there. So and they can go and check out. But, I mean, anything else, quickly to summarize what you do and what's possible?
I realize that it is a very daunting area, and that, again, takes a huge amount of time. And, for instance, even just finding what are the good apps to use. As I'm going along, I'm exploring as I'm going along and finding new things, like, you know, every day myself. But when I do discover and find something that's really good and user-friendly, when I get the time, I make a video to show what I've done. And then that will short circuit the learning process for people who want to explore the same thing. And as I say, I've got this new teaching site. So I put up a video on YouTube sort of demonstrating things. But then if people do want to explore it in much more depth, you know, with an on-screen recording of the iPad screen where they can see exactly what's going on much more easily, they can go to my teaching website.
Just talking about some of your awards, you've won a few awards in your time. You won Spa's International Harmonica Player of the Year in 2011, and you won in 2012 with Team Edy the Best Duo Award at the BBC Two Radio Two Folk Awards.
Yeah, Tim and I were, you know, he's a phenomenal musician, as you know, and we were touring together for 2 or 3 years quite intensively, and put out a couple of albums. That was a real honor to be given that. And yeah, we played at the Radio 2 Folk Award thing on television. So yeah, that was great.
You've done quite a few TV appearances. I saw you played on Jules Holland. I watched that you playing the Dingle Angle on Jules Holland. How was that?
Wow. That was pretty, it just came out of the blue. I mean, we only got told, yes, I think it might have been on the day, because basically there was another band there. I don't know who they were, but they couldn't do it. And I'd sent in, you know, my album Tradish. And basically, I think they needed a fill-in act, you know, very short notice. So they gave me a ring. I think it was around sort of 10 or 11 in the morning. Can you come in and play tonight on the Jules Holland show? So anyway, by that stage, I knew Tim Edy and also Lucy Randall, a brilliant Bowron player. So I rang them up, and they were free that day. It was a very fraught journey. I had this ancient car, which was radiator was boiling, and we had traffic problems and all sorts of things, but we just got there in the nick of time to stumble into the studio and do it. So I remember that day as being very, very stressful, but yeah, we did it.
Well, that's a great performance. It doesn't come across that way. It looks very slick when you're playing, so you didn't have much time to rehearse them beforehand.
No, pretty much do it, yeah. And they wanted me to walk around the studio, but what they didn't realize is that, you know, with the harmonica, you can't see what you're doing. So once you get away from your monitors or whatever, or away from the other musicians, I couldn't actually hear what they were doing so well to lock in with them, you know. With most instruments, you can see what you're doing. You know, on a guitar, you can look at your fingers, or a piano. With the harmonica, unless you can hear yourself well, you might end up playing on hole number 6 instead of hole number 7, which is a disaster. So that was quite stressful as well, because they wanted me to walk around, and it wasn't so easy from the sound side of it.
Yeah, well, I saw you walking around. I know it's a great video. I'll put a link to the video up. It's a great, and there's plenty of other videos of you playing, of course, around, including at Walmart. I was watching you play a little bit. So you've done quite a lot of session work. There's quite a lot listed on your website. You played with Sting, no less. So how was that?
Yeah, that was amazing. I mean, that was not long after I came from New Zealand. You know, I sent off my cassettes, as they were at that time, to various places, heard absolutely nothing, you know, for about 6 months. And, you know, London is a very expensive place to live. I was pretty much ready to go back to New Zealand, to be honest. But then suddenly I got a ring, and you know, Sting wants you on to play on his record. So, you know, from total nothing to someone, an internationally famous star. So yeah, that was pretty cool. That was kind of like a fairly short phase of about a month, where I played on a track on his records, 10 Summoner's Tales. And I played on one track called Something the Boy Said. And then I went out to one of his beautiful homes near Salisbury, and playing with these incredible musicians, Vinnie Colaiuta and David Sanchez and Dominic Miller, you know, sort of world-renowned musicians. I played on another video there that Larry Adler played on the record, Shape of My Heart. So Larry Adler played it on the record, but I think he was ill, or he couldn't get out there. So I played on that as well in a video. So yeah, that was great. And then we did Top of the Pops, which was miming. Sting had a single out, whose name escapes me now, but it had a bit of him playing some very basic little harmonica stabs on it. So I mimed to his Sting's harmonica on there. we did the same thing in Paris. And, you know, so it was about a month of high-level stuff. And then basically they'd moved on. They went off on tour, and I was back to pretty much where I was before. But it did lead to all sorts of other things as well. So it was great.
Yeah, fantastic. And you played with a few other people, Shirley Bassey and Paul Young, and you played on a few movie soundtracks, Atonement, which was an Oscar-winning soundtrack. So did you get anything for that?
We went to the party. I mean, the guy who won the Oscar for the soundtrack was the composer, of course, but he threw a nice party for all the musicians and everyone involved. So, yeah, that was great. I've got a photo.
In the UK, for UK listeners, you also played on, you played with Billy Connolly, but people would have heard him around the world. But for UK listeners, Alvida's Empet, you played on. There's a very famous show here in the UK.
Yeah, that was a buzz. You know, because I love that show, actually. I really enjoyed it. So, yeah, I played on one or two of those series, and that was fun. So when I was in London, which was basically from 92 until 2002, I did quite a bit of session work there. Moving out to Canterbury sort of coincided partly with changes in the music industry as well. I mean, there's a lot less session work of the old style going on these days because, you know, if someone's got a laptop at home, they can do a lot of that stuff just and fly it in. So I still do some session work that way, where people call me up and say, can you play on my album? And I never meet them or whatever, but I play on some tracks. And so, but it's not the same as it used to be, where you would go into these very, very expensive studios in London itself and work away.
You're great at diversifying your income streams as a musician, let's say, which is a...
I think that's a really important point to make for any young harp players listening. Try and diversify. I mean, you can do that in various ways. You can play more than one instrument, for example, you know, get really good at some other instrument like the sax or the guitar. Or so you're not just reliant on being a really good harp player, because the harmonica has got a very specific characteristic sound. And if you're playing in a band, you know, people aren't going to want harmonica on every single song, unless it's your band, of course. That's, again, where this pitch to MIDI can be amazing, because you can actually sound like another instrument with your harmonica using pitch to MIDI software. Secondly, if you can master other skills like customization and stuff like that, then you can have another income stream where you can customize harps for other people and make money that way. Yeah, so definitely diversifying your skills is really a key to having a long-term career in the music business. Teaching, of course, is another one. If all you can do is play really good harmonica, you're going to, no matter how good you are, you're probably going to find it pretty tough.
One question I ask each time is, if you had 10 minutes to practice, what would you spend those 10 minutes doing?
Oh, just whatever I'm into at the time, you know. Again, I couldn't say anything specific, but if I'm into Chinese music, it would be a Chinese thing. If it was into effects, I'd be playing with them. So, yeah, I couldn't say anything specific except what I'm going to buzz on for that at the moment. I've never had a practice regime. I mean, a lot of people practice scales and all this kind of thing, but I've never been one of those.
So we're moving to talking about gear now. So first of all, which harmonica do you play? Now, clearly, we've talked a lot about your harmonica. So which harmonica would you say? Which brand, maybe, or which tunings would be your favorite?
To be honest, I can't give a straight, quick answer to that. In my gig bag, I've got Suzuki's, I've got Honers, I've got some East Tops. Probably those three would be the, selection of those ones would be the ones that I'd use. But and many of them are hybrids, you know, Suzuki replates on a CX-12 comb and that kind of thing. So probably those three brands.
Do you have a favorite key of harmonica? Again, because you play different tunings, this might be a different answer for you.
I guess lower key diatonics I prefer, you know, like low F is very nice. Probably low F to C diatonics, I prefer them to the higher ones.
So overblows, I assume, given that you play a lot of half vowels, which aren't possible to play overblows, you don't play overblows at all, do you not?
I never play them in actual, my playing. I mean, I use them for testing and for demonstrating things for people who do play overblows on unvalved harps. I play all half-valved harps, and overblows are not possible. And also, I've never been mad on overblows, to be honest. The only time I like overblows is when you can actually do more than with a standard harp. For instance, I made something called the overblow booster. So if you can stop that, the lower note in the overblow hole, either, you know, if you take your covers off and just stop it with your lips, or you can put your finger over the blow reed, suddenly your overblow can really be sexy and loud and strong. So in that sense, I do like the sound of overblows then. But on a general harp, unless it's by some extraordinary player like Howard Levy, or and with an amazing Joe Felisco harp, I mean, there are more and more players who can do them well, but in general, I've never liked the sound of them compared to a bend. So, you know, I'd always change my harps to get the same note with a bend of some sort.
And embouchure-wise, you're a puckerer.
Yeah, you know, to start with, I had no idea about that kind of thing back in New Zealand, and I started playing with the lip rolling method for about a year or more, and eventually I thought, I just can't get these things that all the blues guys were doing, and figured out something was wrong in my mouth. I suppose I must be doing something wrong. So I tried the pucker method. Yeah, that suddenly I could do a lot of that stuff. And so I've stuck with that. I have tried tongue blocking once or twice, but never got good enough to stick with it. And also it seems like a backward step in some ways in terms of speed and dexterity. So I've stuck with the lip pursing method.
And amplifier-wise, again, maybe a bit of a different question for you, but do you have a favorite amps?
I've always gone with the sound effects, affecting the sound and then putting it into whatever there is. I mean, at the moment, I've got a really nice amp that I use, which is a Bose amp, but it's a clean amp. You know, it's kind of like a combo vocal instrument amp. In terms of a valve amp, I did have a tiny little Fender Champ for a lot of years, which was really nice. And I've got a few small amps, but mostly I'm interested in doing stuff with electronics to change the sound and then putting it into wherever I am, the PA or whatever. So, I feed my mic into a multi-effects unit or the iPad or whatever and change the sound there, yeah.
And what about a favorite microphone?
I really like Greg Heumann's Blows Me Away mics. I've got a whole bunch of them. The Bulletini is really nice. The Ultimate. So the Bulletini and the Ultimate, it's 58, is it, or 57s? Those are the main ones that I use. But I also love to use cheap little lapel mics. You know, you can buy them for, 10 quid or whatever, tiny little lapel mics, and put them in. You get a lovely sort of hand cupping sound. And another mic that I've just been experimenting more recently with is called PCM mic. And these are those kind of like mics that people use for video conferencing. It sits in the middle of a table. People just talk. And I've got a couple of those, and they're really awesome if you put them in your hand and start and play with them. Yeah, I love experimenting with mics. Probably my favorite would be the tiny little lapel mics, but often they are not so practical. They don't have a volume control, and they can be more prone to feedback and stuff like that.
Again, maybe slightly different for you, a question I ask is around effects pedals. So I think you've already touched on this. You like to use multiprocessor effects and then maybe the iPad for that sort of thing. Yeah. So do you use any specific effects pedals beyond those?
Well, I've got a little thing that I've had for a number of years called the Korg Pandora, which is a multi-effects pedal. It's not a pedal on the floor, but it's a little multi-effects unit about the size of a cigarette box, which has got huge amounts of sound in it. And then that goes into another beautiful effects unit that mounts on your mic stand. I'm really into stuff that you can put on your mic stand. You know, I don't believe in floor effects. I think it's a silly idea for harmonica players. I mean, we've got a free hand, so we should use our hands to manipulate that sound. It's far more accurate than stomping on knobs on the floor. That's for guitarists, really, as far as I can see. So yeah, basically I mount everything on my mic stand, and I've got this really nice mic stand device called the TC Helicon Voice Live Touch, which has got all these lots of lovely effects plus harmonies and stuff like that. And then underneath that I've got a little mixer, and now I'm incorporating the iPad into that setup. So everything's on a little sort of waist height stand, so you can just do everything with your fingers there and change settings really quickly.
Last question. Obviously, now we're in pandemic time. Have you got any future plans coming up? Any tours planned or any recordings in mind for when things open up?
No, it's a short answer. I mean, basically, we just don't know how long this is going to last. Once it is safe to, if there's a vaccine or something like that, and it's safe to travel, I'd love to go back to New Zealand, see my family, and maybe play some music there. I mean, there were a few things in the pipeline for this year, SPA and the Asia Pacific Harmonica Festival, but they've both been cancelled now. Beyond that, who knows?
Yeah, well, I'm sure you'll come up with some more wonderful innovative things during this downtime that you have at home, Brennan. So we can all look forward to that. So, thanks very much for speaking to me. I could literally speak about harmonicas with you all day long, but we'll have to leave it there. So thanks very much.
Yeah, really nice to talk to you.
That's it for today, folks. Once again, thanks to my sponsor, the Lone Wolf Blues Company, providing some great effects pedals and microphones, all purpose-built for the harmonica. Be sure to check out their website. Brendan, players out.